Hey, architecture firm owners and emerging leaders. Get ready for unparalleled insight into the development of a world-class architecture firm and a worldwide organization driving the digital transformation of the design and construction industry. With Build Smart, the podcast that's changing how our profession operates. We share the incredible stories behind innovation in the building industry with my friend and co-host, Patrick McLamey, FAIA, former CEO of the international architecture firm, HOK.
You know, Yamasaki's office or firm lasted during his lifetime. And when he passed away, I think that was the end of the Yamasaki office. Helmuth did not want that. He wanted a firm that would live out and grow beyond the founders.
In season one, discover the untold stories behind HOK's meteoric rise from 150 employees in St. Louis to a powerhouse with over 1,900 staff members and 27 offices worldwide.
You know, they weren't as polite as the Kojima people. That was just boom. And anytime you have a creditor, whether it's Kojima or the bank, that wants their money, unless you can raise money someplace else, you are out of business.
Bankrupt.
Bankrupt.
And hold on tight for season two, where Patrick takes us on a new adventure as chairman of Building Smart International, shaping the future of digital transformation in the design, construction, and operation of built assets.
Ian Howell, Ken Harold, and I, Ken was my technical representative from HOK. The three of us took a tour of Europe of 5 cities in 5 days. Very busy time.
Simply follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Smart now and uncover lessons that will transform you and your architecture firm. Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, Episode 15. Welcome to this episode of the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your studio dreams. In this episode, I'll be talking about fees. Yes, that taboo topic, compensation for architectural services. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Entrepreneur Architect Academy, a multi-session online education program designed and built for you, the sole proprietor, small firm architect, or architecture student. Entrepreneur Architect Academy is coming soon and space will be limited, so if you're interested in learning more, be sure to sign up for the pre-launch list at entrearchitect.com/courses. Before we jump into the topic this week, I just want to quickly talk about a few things. First, I received a great response to my previous podcast episode with Emily Grandstaff Rice, the new president of the Boston Society of Architects. We talked about where the profession has been and where it stands today and where we think it might be 20 years from now. If you haven't listened to that podcast episode, I highly recommend that you do. It was a very interesting conversation, and Emily is a very inspiring woman. She and I were kidding that we think we might be kindred spirits. I really enjoyed speaking with Emily, and you can find that episode at entrearchitect.com/episode14. Check it out and let me know what you think in the comments section. Next, I wanted to just quickly mention this week's blog post article, The Passion Profit Cycle of Success. It's an article that I posted back in 2012, and I wanted to repost it this week. The entrepreneur architect community has grown so much this past year since I relaunched the blog, and I know that there are many new readers that have missed many of my earlier posts, so I'll continue to post new work every week, but occasionally I want to pull out some of my goodies from the archives and share them for fresh eyes and get some fresh comments on those ideas. It's one of my favorites. This post is certainly one of my favorites. I write about the relationship between our passion for architecture and the importance of a profitable business. One feeds the other and they keep each other going. It's the key to a successful architecture firm. So don't miss this post. I even share 5 ways to earn more profit. I'd love to know what you think. What are some of the ways that you found to be more profitable? Head over to the blog and share your thoughts in the comments section of that post. The blog back in 2007, there's been one topic that I've been asked about more than any other. Whenever I write about it, either at the blog or over at the Entrepreneur Architect LinkedIn group, which, by the way, is closing in on 6,000 members, the comment sections light up. It's the one topic for generations has been untouchable. We've been trained by our schools and required by our professional organizations to avoid discussing this topic at all costs, or else. Well, today, right here on the podcast, I'm talking about it. I'm talking about fees for architectural services. Traditionally, there's been 4 different fee structures from which a small firm architect may choose. There's the cost per square foot, the hourly fee, the stipulated sum, which is also known as the fixed fee or the flat fee, and the percentage of construction cost. Those are the 4. And for 15 years, I've been experimenting with pretty much all of them, looking for the best fee structure. And there's good and bad for each of them. I've used them all except for the cost per square foot. For the work that we do at Five Cat Studio, which is high-end residential additions and alterations work, cost per square foot doesn't really work for us. So I've never really tried it. It's more suited for tenant work, for offices, and maybe retail, depending on the level of detail and the finish required for those type of projects. So I don't really have much to say about cost per square foot other than I haven't used it. So if you've used it, I'd love to know your thoughts on being compensated by cost per square foot, how you find it to work, what you charge for your cost per square foot. You can go over to the blog post at entrearchitect.com/episode15 and leave your comments there. When we first launched the firm back in 1999, our early proposals were all hourly fees. We had no experience and we really had no idea how or how much we should be charging for our services. The hourly fee is the easiest structure to propose and it's certainly the easiest for clients to understand. Our first projects were retail and we were designing restaurants and salons. So it's kind of small boutique commercial spaces. And we charged a very low fee in order to give our prospects the comfort level they required to hire 2 young architects with virtually no portfolio. At the time, Anne-Marie and I were 29 years old. At $60 per hour, we were essentially giving away our services. But truthfully, we had no idea what other firms were charging. So we charged what we thought we should. Not unlike many emerging professionals today, we started by proposing a number and hoping that that number would work and that clients would bite. There's no rhyme or reason on how we got to that number. We didn't even have a year's worth of expenses on which to plan our finances. It was purely a guess, and it was enough to get us started. The benefits of using an hourly fee is that it's very easy to understand by the client, and it's very flexible if the scope of work changes. You work an hour, and you get paid X. Through the years, we stopped using an hourly fee for basic services. Today, we only propose hourly fees for additional services and small projects with very specifically defined scopes. At $250 per hour today, our hourly fees, they're up where they need to be to cover our expenses and our overhead and to earn us an honest profit. But like I said, we don't propose hourly fees any longer. The same flexibility that's seen as a benefit can also be a problem. Like many architects, we work a tremendous number of hours. And in order to get paid by our client, each invoice becomes, a new negotiation session. Negotiation with either our client or internally with myself as I prepare the invoice. If I charge every hour we work, the total number of hours become pretty high. And from a client's point of view, it becomes unreasonably high and we end up negotiating, quote unquote, a fair amount. Or on the other hand, I'd often find myself pre-negotiating with myself, trying to determine what amount is the right amount in order to avoid that conflict. essentially give hours and hours away for free in order to encourage a timely, painless payment. That's certainly not the road to a successful business. So we no longer work hourly. And if a prospect does want to work an hourly fee, and many of them do, we just explain that we no longer work and why we don't work for hourly fees, and we hope they understand. And if they don't, we respectfully refer them to friends of ours who may be more willing to work within their parameters. We have plenty of architects in the region that work hourly and lots of friends who do. And so we're happy to refer our work to them. It allows for space for other work. You may have heard me say this before. Sometimes you make more money on the projects you don't take. If we can't be profitable using an hourly fee, then we're better off not taking the job at all. It leaves space for more profitable projects and allows us to remain happy being a practicing architect. Next are stipulated sum fees. You know, the stipulated sum or fixed or flat fee, it's the fee that every client is looking for. They all want to know exactly how much their project's going to cost and how much our fee will be before we even do any work or even before we prepare a contract. I understand that. That would be nice if we could accurately quote a cost and know exactly how much we should be charging to meet our expenses and make a profit. But truthfully, that's impossible. In reality, one of two things happen with flat fees. We either estimate them low in order to meet the client's expectations and get the job, only to learn that we're not earning enough money to run our business. Or we estimate high in order to provide a cushion and ensure that we'll make out of the project alive. Estimating a project's final scope of work and committing to it to a stipulated sum before schematic design is complete is very dangerous. A few times that we've experimented with pure upfront stipulated sums, we've lost our shirt every time. Residential clients don't know what they don't know. They think they know what they want. But it's very rare that the final scope is anything close to the initial scope of work that they think they want. This requires an agreement that specifies a very detailed project description and a renegotiation every time the project changes. Renegotiating a contract is not beneficial to the owner-architect relationship. Ultimately, the most important thing in business is a happy client who will refer you to all their friends and other happy clients. And discussing money is the quickest way to an unhappy client, unless, of course, you're giving them money back. Renegotiating fees is stressful and uncomfortable. From an architect's perspective, of the four that I'm presenting here, I feel the best fee structure is a percentage of construction cost. And yes, I know many of you disagree with me. I've had this debate many times with architects and clients alike. The argument is that our fee is tied to the cost of construction. And as architects, we control the cost of the project. Many claim that there's a conflict of interest with the fee based on a percentage of construction cost, that we have an incentive to design an expensive project, which therefore increases our fee. That argument is flawed. If you are dishonest and you don't plan on being in business for very long, that argument may be valid. But my goal, like I said, is a happy client, and projects that are over budget do not make happy clients. Projects on budget, or better yet, under budget, make very happy clients and happy enough to refer us to other people. Our incentive is to make the client happy. Second, the argument that the architect controls the cost of the project is also flawed. The client controls the cost of the project. They establish the program, they set the budget, they approve cost estimates throughout the process and ultimately make the final decisions on many, if not every, decision on fixtures and finishes. The cost of the project is controlled by the client, not the architect. What I like about the percentage-based fee is that it adjusts automatically as the client revises the budget. There's no need for renegotiation. There's no need for stressful, uncomfortable conversations about fees. If the owner chooses to raise the budget, which increases the scope of work, the fee is simply adjusted to cover the additional work required. I believe a fee based on a percentage of construction cost is the most fair of them all. And if given the option, it's the fee structure that I choose to use. But, as I mentioned earlier, my goal is a happy client, and whether or not the percentage-based fee is fair or not is also ultimately not very important. What matters most is how the client feels, their perception of fairness. If a client feels uncomfortable with the way the fee is determined and how we're getting paid, then we need to find a better way. Each structure has its benefits and each has its problems. We've tweaked and experimented with each one, and we've tried to find the best way to request compensation for what we do and keep the client happy throughout the entire process. The best way we've found is to take a little bit from one and take a little bit from another and develop a fifth fee structure that we feel works better than any of the others. We call it the hybrid fee. Like the name implies, we've mixed two structures to make one. The hybrid fee gives the client what they want in a stipulated sum, a flat fixed fee, but we've based that fee on a percentage of construction cost. Here's how it works. Upon signing a contract, our clients send us an initial payment, which is held as a credit and applied to the final invoice at the end of the project. We typically request about 1% of the anticipated construction cost, which we quickly calculate following the initial interview with our prospect. So for a project that we expect will cost in the range of $250,000 to construct, we request $2,500 initial payment. We also provide pre-design services as a separate service with a separate cost per square foot fee. We're paid separately and additionally at 75 cents per square foot to measure and document the existing conditions of the homes in which we're working. We don't include that work in our fee for basic services, and we very rarely get pushback for being compensated separately for this work. So, for a 3,000 square foot house we might be measuring, we get paid $2,250 upon completion of that work. So, we complete schematic design without a set fee, and we use the funds we've collected as initial payment and for the pre-design services to cover our expenses until an accurate scope of work is determined by schematic design. Once we have a final schematic design, we request a cost estimate from a third-party contractor. Ultimately, it's one of the bidders. And we determine our fee from a published fee schedule included in our proposal. The schedule is a list of stipulated sum amounts based on 12% of the cost of construction. And that percentage kind of goes up and down through the years, but right now it's at 12%. It's been at 12% for the last couple of years. With a completed schematic design, a defined scope of work, and a preliminary cost estimate, we can then provide our clients with the flat fee they're looking for. The flat fee locks in and does not adjust unless the client chooses to significantly increase the scope of work following an approved schematic design. So it works pretty well. The hybrid fee gives the client what they want, and it allows us to base our fee on a real project, not an underestimated guess based on a client's inexperienced hopes, dreams, and unrealistic expectations. We've been using our hybrid fee for over 2 years now. Clients love it, and we love it. You may want to give it a try. If you're interested in learning more about the hybrid fee, go to entrearchitect.com/hybrid, and I have more information for you there. You can even purchase a course that I've developed on how to prepare your own hybrid proposal owner-architect agreement, which we use for every project we do at Five Cat Studio, and it includes this hybrid fee. You can check it out at entrearchitect.com/hybrid. So there you go. That's my take on architectural fees. I hope it helps you determine the best fee structure for you and your firm. Whether you use a cost per square foot, an hourly fee, a stipulated sum or percentage, or if you've purchased my course and you're using my hybrid fee, I'd love to know what you think. This is a very important topic. The secrecy surrounding architectural fees makes it very difficult for emerging professionals to launch a firm and build a successful business. For generations, the discussion on fees has been non-existent, and small firm architects have struggled to build strong, healthy firms. This must stop. We must share our knowledge with one another. We must support one another. We must work together to build a better profession of collaboration and encouragement. What's your favorite fee structure and why? How much are you charging? Go to entrearchitect.com/episode15 and leave a comment at the blog. This is a topic that always inspires creative, passionate comments, so be sure to leave your thoughts and contribute to the conversation. Before we wrap up this episode, I just want to briefly mention a few quick items. In future episodes, I'd love to answer your questions about business and architecture. If you have specific issues that you're dealing with, or if you have a problem that you need some help to resolve, send me a question and I'll try to answer it right here on the podcast. Go to entrearchitect.com/podcast question and send me your thoughts. Next, the Entrepreneur Architect Resource Guide is a 12-part series of articles that addresses every aspect of business required for a successful architecture firm. It's free, and you can find it at entrearchitect.com/academy. And finally, if you want to learn more about me, I recently updated my About page at the blog. Go to entrearchitect.com/about and learn who I am and why I do what I do. I know that many of you are wondering why I spend so much time here at Entrepreneur Architect with a full-time business at Five Cat Studio. Well, my About page gives you some answers. So that's a wrap. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you found it worth your time, and if you liked it, please tell a friend. Until next week, my name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an Entrepreneur Architect. Thanks for listening.
I've mentioned it to my family, but in terms of telling people like, oh yeah, we're doing this, I'm looking for projects, you got anything? Yeah. I'm not there yet because it scares the shit out of me.
Dreaming of launching your own architecture firm? Well, buckle up for a wild ride with Emerging, the podcast that shares what it's really like to start an architecture firm.
Where do we begin? We don't even know what type of business to formalize as. Is it an LLC? Is it an LLP? Like, how are taxes? I mean, the list is astronomical.
Season 1 featured founders Jeffrey, Lexi, and Chris, owners of Level Studio Architecture, are your fearless guides on this unfiltered journey from napkin sketches to a thriving studio.
One evening, stumbled into one last dive, we sat at the bar and pondered our postgraduate futures. Amidst the conversation, a napkin became the canvas for our aspirations, sketching plans and milestones, sealing our heartfelt commitment and shared dreams.
In drawing down dreams on a napkin collectively, that then, in your head, you've rooted like, oh, I'm connected to these people, like, long term.
The process of starting an architecture practice brims with excitement and challenges, demanding meticulous planning, flawless execution, and unyielding resilience.
I kind of hate the term because it's so overly used, but I think everybody knows imposter syndrome. And I think it's so real to this day. I don't know if it's with everybody, but with me, I'm always questioning like, us, can we do this? Are we ready to do this? Are we prepared? Can we do it?
Did we just decide a name?
We did it, guys.
Oh my
God. The one that came out of nowhere.
Woo! It came out of nowhere. I liked it. I saw it.
Ready to turn your aspirations into reality? Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Emerging and chart your own path to architectural success.
Calling all small firm architects, it's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there,
And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill, is most important. And so I would say, like, that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.